We are holding on Kufyud Gimel Amud Aleph, the fourth line. We left off that Rav Mori Bar Rochel had come to Rava with a question where he had some kosher and non-kosher meat that was salted together, and the question is: are we concerned that the kosher meat absorbed some liquid sear, as we called it before, like brine from the non-kosher meat? And Rava told him that yes, we are concerned about that, and even though the kosher meat is being salted and it's exuding its blood, nevertheless it can still absorb some of the liquid from the non-kosher. In other words, it's one thing if it was all kosher, but here we have a different problem. So the Gemara says basically, then I have a contradiction on what Rava is saying. Bryce says dog tohu shemolchayim dog tomei. A kosher fish that was salted together with a non-kosher fish, mutter. Then the kosher fish remains mutter. We're not worried about it absorbed. My love, shnei meluchin. Show you shnei meluchin. Shouldn't we assume that we're talking about even where both of them are salted? And we see therefore that the tzir, that the juice that comes out of the non-kosher one, is not going to get absorbed as long as the other one is busy exuding. And whereas Rava is saying that you do have that problem. And the answer is loy, not necessarily. No, because we could be talking about that the kosher one was salted and the non-kosher one was unsalted. So it's not salted, it's not going to really be exuding anything. So therefore, there's nothing for the kosher one to absorb for there to be a problem. But if the non-kosher one was salted, which would be more similar to the Mari Bar Rochel's case, then there would indeed be a problem. And all the more so, Rashi says, all the more so if the Tomei one is salted and the Tohar one and the kosher one is unsalted, then there's no question that the juice that comes out of the Tomei one is going to get absorbed into the kosher one, because after all, there's nothing, it's not even exuding anything. So there is a discussion among Rishonim. Are we talking about, is it enough for it to be a problem that the fish are near each other, or is it only if they're touching one another? Maybe there's an issue only if they're touching, because then one will actually absorb directly from the other. Whereas if they're just near each other, like in the same container or whatever, there may not be a problem. The Ran learns that would be that way, whereas the Rosh says that no, we're talking davka when they touch one another. The Rashba also holds that way as the Rosh as well. Okay. So the Gemara says Vahomi Jikatani Sefer. Yeah, but look at the continuation of the Braise. It continues Avrim Hoya Torah Maliach the Tamei Tafel, where it says that if the kosher fish was salted and the non kosher fish was unsalted. And then on the side over here, it says it's supposed to be mutter. It's supposed to be that at that point it would be mutter. Miklal de Reisha Bishishnei Malucha Maskinon, implying that in the Reisha we're talking about where both of them are salted. So only if the Tommy one was not salted, but it sounds like if they're both salted, then the Reisha is saying that it's mutter. So in other words, we'd be saying in both cases it's mutter. And the answer is no. Perushi Tomafarish, the Braisa may be explaining. Tohor Shemochayim Dog Tomei, when you salted a kosher fish together with a non-kosher fish, mutter, then it would be mutter, ketzad. But what would be the case? Where it would be mutter? Where the kosher one was salted and the non-kosher one was not, and therefore it's not exuding anything. So the Braisa is not telling us two different cases; it's telling us one case, and it's clarifying what that case is. Tosfos points out in this connection when we talk about hot foods, we've talked off and on the last couple of days about the concept of tatar govar and ilor govar, where the halacha is tatar govar, that the lower one overpowers the upper one and therefore prevents it from, and therefore we said, for example, if hot food falls into cold food, then the cold food has enough of an effect on it that it cools it off, and therefore that it doesn't completely, the hot food doesn't completely absorb, just a little bit, just like a klifa, we said, it peels thickness or whatever. Here, Tosfos points out, when we're talking about moliach kereseach, when we talk about that something is salted and therefore it's considered boiling, then tatar gavra is not really relevant. So therefore, when we say over here it would be mutter, it would actually be completely mutter. You wouldn't even require klifa. You wouldn't even need to peel off. You wouldn't even need to peel off a layer. And Tosfos brings in this connection an interesting point that if you have, for example, presses that are used for making cheese by goyim, and now a Jew wants to make cheese over there and then make salty cheese, then it would be mutter because then it would be mutter. That you would be able to do that. Machmer tovay al bracha, and Tosfos says someone is machmer then tovay al bracha. So you have, in other words, in principle, when things are used with salt by for non kosher food, in principle, there are some times when you could conceivably afterwards use it for kosher food without having to do a thorough kashering. Okay. In any case, the Gemara is saying that the two cases of the Braisa are not really two cases. It's one case. And the Braisa is just clarifying. When is it mutter? When only the Tahor one was salted. But again, in Rav Mari Bar Yochel's case, both of them were salted, the kosher and the non-kosher food, and therefore that's different. So the Gemara says, Hachinami Misabra. In fact, it seems logical to understand it that way, to say that in fact the Braisa is not talking two different cases, but rather that it's explaining itself. Because if you were going to tell me that, in the Reisha, the two of them, the both of them are salted, then you have to figure, hash the shnei meluchim shari, then if both of them, you're telling me a mutter, tavah maliach, the tamay tafel meboya, how much more so if only the tavah one was salted and the tamay one was not, because then obviously there's even less reason to think that it would be exuding anything. So obviously, the way the Braisa is putting the order of things, it has to be that it's two cases, because otherwise there's no reason to even bother mentioning the second case at all. But the Gemara says, Imishum Holo Iria. If that's the reason why you're saying, if you're going to say because of that, then that shows the Braisa is not talking about two cases, but rather one continuous case. If you're going to say that, Lo Iria, then that's not really relevant. That's not really a strong argument. Because Tana Sefer Galuya Resha, on the contrary, you could say that, in fact, they are two different cases. One where both of them are salted, which then, if we learned it that way, would contradict Rabba's din, that in that case they are, in fact, both Osir. And the second case where only the kosher one was salted. But you could say, on the contrary, maybe it is two cases, and saying the Sefer, you're going to say that, and what's the Chiddush? If even in the first case it's mutter, how much more so in the second case? You would say though, you could say tana seifa legaluya reisha. You could say that the Braisa is telling us the second case precisely in order to clarify what the first case is. The loy tema, just the opposite. Maybe you shouldn't think reisha tovam aliyach the tomei tofel. Maybe you shouldn't. You would think maybe that the first case is talking about, like we're saying, in order to make this Braisa work according to Rava, necessarily we have to say that the reisha, where again we said according to him, the reisha and the seifa are talking about the same case, and it's just clarifying. And it's saying that in both cases the tahor was salted, the tamei was not. But maybe not. Maybe on the contrary. Maybe the Braisa is implying that. That you shouldn't have it that way. That you should say that the first case is in fact talking about where neither one of them has been salted. You shouldn't say that. Abel shnei meluchim also. Maybe you would think if both of them are salted, it would be also, like Rava says. No, tana sefer. Therefore, in the sefer it says tahor maliach, the tamei tofel. That in the second case the tahor was salted, the tamei one was not, and that would tell you miklal dereisha shnei meluchim, implying that in the reisha both of them are salted, v'afilu hochi shari, and even so it is mutter. So you can't really demonstrate, maybe the Braisa is indeed talking one continuous case, but maybe in fact it is talking about two separate cases, and it's phrased like that precisely so you can understand what this first scenario is and what the second, and in that case then you have no proof from this Braisa for Rava. It wouldn't be a question on him, because Rava could equally well learn the Braisa the other way around, but you can't say that the Braisa is a proof for Rava's din where both of them are salted, and that we should say that the kosher one becomes also. Okay. So the Gemara says, fine, Toshma. Toshma mi sefer de sefer. Fine, let's prove it then from the end of the Braisa. We said Avlim Hoya Tommy Maliach the Tahar Tofel. We said the last case was if the Tommy one was salted and the Tahar one was not. Then we said the kosher one becomes osir because then it absorbed from the non-kosher one and it's not exuding anything and therefore it's obviously going to absorb the juice from the non-kosher one. And again, as Rava had told Ramari Baruch, we have a pasuk telling us, we have a limud from a pasuk that the juice that comes out of non-kosher ones is also of non-kosher fish or meat or whatever is also, and therefore you're going to have a problem. Now, implying only because Tomei Maliach V'Tahor Tofel Hu D'Asur. So the implication seems to be, you know why it's Asur? Because the kosher one wasn't salted at all, and therefore it's not exuding anything. Hoshnei and Meluch and Shari. But the implication of that seems to be that if both of them are salted, it would be fine. Because then, there is juice coming out of the non-kosher one, very well, but the kosher one right now is salted, and it's exuding its own blood and juices, and therefore, I did tarot the miflat leibala, as it's exuding, it's not absorbing, and therefore there's no problem. So then in that case, then we would say that there are, so we would say that that last case, so in other words, the Braisa would be saying, as long as the kosher one is salted, then it's fine, whether the non-kosher one is salted or not, because I did total the miflat lebala. Only in the case, therefore, in the first two cases of the Braisa, it would in fact be mutter. Only when it comes to the third case, where the kosher one was not salted, and there was no I did total the miflat, because it's not exuding, then we would say there's a problem. So then if you learn that way, then, So if you learn that way, then the Braisa is in fact a question on Rava. So the answer is not necessarily Aidi D'Tana Reisha. You could say that the Braisa in the third case, just as mentioning that is mentioning that case because already in the mention the Reisha Torah Moliach the Tomei Tofel. Where again, according to Rava's understanding of the Braisa, the first two cases of the Braisa is really one case where the Tahor was salted and the Tomei was not. And again, we're saying therefore there's no problem because the Tomei one is not exuding anything. Toninami Sefer Tomei Maliach the Tahor Tofel. Therefore, in the Sefer, it tells us the other way around. There's less of a chiddush in that, and the fact would be so, even if both of them were salted. So you could, after all, make the Braisa work according to Rava. So, okay, so you could say, in other words, the Braisa is talking about three cases. About three cases. Case A, where they're both salted, and they're still mutter. Case B, where the Tahor was salted and the Tomei was not, and it's also mutter. And we could say then that the reason why it mentions that, even though there's less of a chiddush, is precisely to clarify what the scenario is in the first case. And then the third case would be the other way around. The kosher salted, the kosher unsalted, the trefa one salted, and that would be also. You could learn it that way, and then that wouldn't fit with Rava. Or you could learn it like Rava does, which is the Braisa is telling us only two cases, one where the kosher one was salted and the non-kosher one was not, which will be mutter, and the other way around where the kosher was unsalted and the non-kosher was salted, and then it's also, and the implication is it would also be also if both of them are salted, like Rava says. Okay. So we haven't brought a proof from this Braisa to Rava, but we also haven't contradicted him from it, and the halacha is indeed like Rava, that when you have something like that and you have kosher and non-kosher salted together, then in fact you are going to have a problem, because again, even eventually it exudes all its blood, but there's still going to be the kosher one exudes all its blood, but it's still going to be, there's going to come a point where it's not exuding anymore, its juices or whatever, and then it's going to absorb from the other one. So now let's continue talking about these dinim of salting meat in general. The whole time we've been talking off and on about the matter of salting meat to remove the blood. So now let's talk about, now let's get into the details of that. So first the Gemara says, Simon, Bisra, the Manach Nafkusa. These are, as the Gemara often does, but these simonim, each one is a keyword for the next three statements that the Gemara is going to mean. Bisra literally means meat. The Manach, that is placed. And that's going to be a din about placing the meat, and nafkusa about coming out, about the blood coming out. So as the Gemara usually does, then we have a simon simon for these three coming dinim, and therefore we're and that'll help us remember them. So the first, these are three dinim of Shmuel's. So first of all, Omer Shmuel, ein abaso yotzi midei damai, blood, meat does not, you can't get rid of the blood in meat, elein kein mocha yafa yafa, or medicha yafa yafa, unless you salt it very well, and wash it very well. And then, so that'll effectively get rid of the blood, but without that, but without that not. And as the Gemara is going to go, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, you need okay. So you need to salt it and you need to wash it. This is talking about, by the way, if you're not going to roast it. If you're going to roast it, as we learned before, then in principle you don't need to salt it as heavily as you do for cooking. Nonetheless, though, you do need to salt it. Either the poskim, the consensus of the poskim is that you do need to salt it to some extent, and then you can and then you can roast it. The post can talk about post can talk about what happens if a person is on a salt restricted diet, what he can do in that case. There were posts who talked about maybe you could use sugar or maybe you could use salt substitutes or whatever, but not all the posts can like that idea. And they discuss different other possibilities. Maybe indeed you can roast it and rely on the post. And we'll say that you can roast it without having to salt it first. So they discuss different details in that. So the Gemara says, Itmar, Rav Huna Amar Meleach HaMadiach. So now it was said, a detail within that, that Rav Huna says, you salt it and then you wash it afterwards. A braisa actually says that you rinse it first, you wash it first, then you salt it, then you wash it again. And the Gemara points out, there's no actual machlokas between them. Everybody agrees that you need a pre-washing. But it depends whether at the butcher they washed it first. So then you buy this pre-washed meat. So then you only need to salt it and then wash it afterwards. Whereas if they didn't, if you get it still with the blood on it, then you're going to have to wash it first. So the Rishonim bring two major ideas why you should have to wash it before you salt it. The Ra'ah explains that you have this blood on the surface. So now what's going to happen is if you salt it without washing off that surface blood first, that dried blood even, what's going to happen is the salt will pull out the blood from within the meat, but afterwards you're going to have, then this blood that was on the surface is going to get absorbed back in, and then you're not going to be able to remove it afterwards. So therefore you have to wash it off first. And the Ran gives a different reason, which is that you need to soften it, so that way the salt will actually be able to extract the blood. And there's nafkaminas between them. For example, what happens if you soak the meat and then you cut a piece in two? According to the Ran, fine, it was already softened. According to the Ra'ah, now you have a new surface, so now you're going to have to wash it again. What if you didn't? What if you didn't wash it? What are you going to need? Shishim, connected the whole piece, or just connected the blood on the surface? And you have different points about that. So in Shulchan Aruch it brings that, yeah, if you cut meat after the first soaking, then you are indeed going to need to rinse it again, like the Ra'ah says, and the Ramah says that if you didn't, then it's considered as though it wasn't rinsed at all, and then you have problems like that. And for that matter, when we say Hadacha over here, there are Rishonim who learn that rinsing is enough, but we say that there's another understanding that Hadacha means soaking it, and that's what we do. So we soak it in water for a while. However, you do have to be careful not to soak it too much. As we learned before, Kavo Shareo Kimavushal, if you soak it in water for 24 hours, it'll be considered like it's cooked. So you have to make sure to soak it for less than that. And then you have the Rosh and the Ritva bring that you have to wash it at least two times. You have to wash it first in order to get after the salting. You have to wash it once to get rid of the blood and the salt, and then another one to get rid of the washing from the first time around. And the Ur Zeruah says you should wash it a third time as well. So it's almost like washing our hands. And then the Rambam, on the other hand, brings that basically it's, there's no specific number. You just have to keep washing it until you get rid of the redness. So you have quite a lot of discussion about the details within that. As far as Madiach Yafa Yafa, as far as washing it very well, as far as the Mocha Yafa Yafa, the salting it very well, means you have to salt it very heavily so that it's covered with salt on all sides. And a number of the Rishonim say it has to be so salted that you wouldn't be able to eat it with that salt. So ideally you should do it on both sides, and then the post can talk about what happens if you salted it only on one side, b'di'evad. Some say it would be fine, but yeah, but others say the Mordechai brings that no, it's going to be also even, but yeah, but if it wasn't salted on both sides, on the other hand, the Rashba says it's only a mitzvah and a mufra. You also have interesting details that come up in this regard. You have a lot of practical things that come out of this Gemara as far as the soaking and the salting and all that. You have interesting dinim. What about if, first of all, they talk about if you didn't salt the meat, if you didn't wash and salt the meat within 3 days after the shita, then you have a problem because now the blood is congealed on the surface or even inside it, and the salting is not going to be effective to remove it. So then you're going to have no choice but to roast it. And they talk about, for example, if the meat is frozen, does that stop the clock? Does the freezing count towards the 3 days as well? And if the meat is frozen, then you have to defrost it first before you salt it, but you have to be careful about defrosting it again so you don't do it in a way that's going to cook it before you actually salt it. So there's quite a lot of details and complications in that. Again, in most places in the world, most of us don't salt our own meat anymore. We rely on the kosher, and we rely on the kosher meat producers to do it for us. So the Gemara continues. Reb Dimi min Hadar, Malach Leim b'Milcha Glom Nisa. Reb Dimi min Hadar, when he salted meat to kasher it, he would use coarse salt, Milcha Glom Nisa. Means coarse salt, or menapitzle, and afterwards he would shake or brush it off, because after all, the salt itself absorbs blood, and therefore you need to remove it as well. So first you remove the salt, then you wash it the two or three times. In fact, the Rama points out that if you get off the salt and then you wash it two more times, then you have what the Ur Zeruah said, that you have to wash it three times and then it's good. So the point is now why do we have to mention that he used coarse salt? So Rashi explains, had he used fine salt, then it wouldn't really be necessary because it would just dissolve on its own. So in other words, according to Rashi, it would be fine to salt using fine salt as well, like table salt, but only because he used coarse salt did he have to first brush or shake it off. On the other hand, the Rashba explains that no, just the opposite. You have to use coarse salt because then you can easily get it off the meat afterwards, as opposed to if you use fine salt, then it's going to stick to the meat and then you're going to get so clean. You're going to have to wash it very, very heavily. And then another point as well, the Rambam brings, and the Ritva brings from Rabbi Hudoi Goin, that even more so, it means you have to use coarse salt because fine salt is just going to get absorbed into the meat and not take out the blood at all. So the bottom line is you're supposed to use coarse salt. You're supposed to use kosher salt. This is the salt that they sell in the store under the name kosher salt is the right size for that. You don't want to use salt with too big things. You don't want to use like the rock salt they use for snow or whatever. That's too big and it won't stick to meat at all. So you need a medium size one, which is the kosher salt that they sell in the stores. Okay. Another din in this connection. Amar Meshashia, Ein Machzikin Dam B'Vnei Me'ayim. We do not assume that the tishkis of the animal have blood in them. They have very little blood in them, and what there is can be bottled. So therefore, if you end up cooking, so you're supposed to salt them like any other meat. But if you didn't, then b'di'evit, if you cook them, it's not going to be osur. Unlike other meat, where if you cooked it without salting it, then you have a problem. And the idea is the Rishonim explain that the Bnei Me'ayim, the Kishkis themselves, don't really have blood, but you do have, if nothing else, you have the fat that's stuck to them, and that contains blood, and therefore you have to, and if nothing else, you have to get rid of that. Tosfos also points out that on the face of it, does that mean if you're salting the kishkis together with other meat, would there be a problem? Because then the kishkis are not exuding, and then they're going to absorb blood from the other. Tosfos says that's not a problem. Because it's true they're not exuding at this point, but nevertheless the blood being smooth is going to slide off, and since they're tough, they're not going to absorb the blood so easily, and therefore it would be fine. Tosfos also goes on to say, by the same logic, if while you're roasting meat, you pour blood on it, would it be mutter? No, it's only when blood is exuded together with juices, like by roasting, then we can talk about that it'll slide off. So you can't just take some blood and pour it over it and expect the roasting to take care of it. But here, when it comes to these bnei me'ayim, when it comes to these kishkis, then you can indeed, as Tosfos says, salt them together with other meat, and you don't have a problem. But even then, you are supposed to salt them v'chatchila. Which intestines are we talking about? Tirgma, so he explained that what he means is, which bnei me'ayim, akarkasha, he means the colon, the last part of the intestines, or me'aya, and the stomachs and the small intestine, the hadra decanta, and the winding part of the intestines, which is the large intestine. So those parts, we're saying, in machzik and dam, we don't assume that they contain much in the way of blood, and again, whatever there is going to easily be bottled, and therefore, b'di'evit, if you didn't salt them, then it's fine, but l'chatchila, you're supposed to salt those as well. The Gemara continues, Amar Shmuel, Ein manichin basam aliyach el agabe klim nukav. When you're putting meat to salt it, when you're putting it in the salt, and then you're going to leave it in the salt for a while to have time to draw out the blood, you can do it only in a keli that has holes. We talked about that previously, that if you did it in a keli without holes, then you have a problem, because then the blood collects there and gets reabsorbed. So now you have a machlokas we showed him within that. Does it mean that it's a problem only after it finishes exuding? So that would mean if you did do it in an unperforated keli, and then it wouldn't be a problem unless you left it in there after the amount of time that it's going to finish exuding, that it's going to start absorbing again. Whereas according to that way of looking at it, if you did it in a keli without holes, and then you took it out right away while it's still exuding, then it might not be a problem. But there are other Rishonim, that's according to Rashi. But then there are many other Rishonim who learn that no, it's going to right away start absorbing, because then it's soaking in the blood, and therefore the fact that it's poilet is not going to prevent it from absorbing. So as a practical matter, then if you salt meat within a keli that doesn't have holes, then you start having big problems. How much of it becomes oser? Then what about do you have only the part that's in the, first of all, you have, if it was enough time that you could then put water on the fire and it'll start boiling, that an amount equal that's soaking in the juice over there, then it would be also to eat that meat. It says in Shulchan Aruch, even roasted. As far as the part outside the juice, that would be also only kadeh klifa, only a peel's thickness, even if it has fat in it. And then the Ramah goes on to say, some say that the entire piece, even what's outside the tzir, would be also as well, because it's going to penetrate from one part to the other. So therefore, you have to be sure to do it in a keli with holes. Another possibility that the post can point out is you can do it on an inclined plane, and that would also be fine. You can do it on a board, for example, that's tilted, and then also blood will drain away. That's also fine. In that case, the post can point out, you do have to make sure that it doesn't have crevices or things where blood and sear are going to collect. Okay. So the Gemara says, Rav Sheshes, Molech Lagarma Garma. Rav Sheshes, when he would kasher meat, he would kasher it one piece at a time. He wouldn't allow them together. He wouldn't do a bunch of them together, because you don't want that one of them is going to absorb blood. You don't want that the one further down is going to absorb blood from the other. So therefore, you would do each one by itself. But the Gemara says, why? Today my time alive. Why wouldn't Rav Sheshes do two together? Apparently, the reason is Mishum Kapodesh Mehai Balahai, because blood is going to exude from one and then get absorbed into the other. Well, by that logic, Chad Nami, Porish Mehai Gisa, Volahai Gisa. Well, then even if he saw it one piece, then conceivably you could have blood comes out one end and goes back in the other end. And we see that he's not worried about that. So therefore there's no difference. You're just as well allowed to salt two or more pieces together. Even if Tosfos points out, even if the second one is partially on top of the one that was, even if you salted meat, and then later on you added more meat to the pile, it would still be mutter, as Tosfos explained before, because it still continues to exude, and therefore it's not going to absorb yet. Okay. So there is a machlokas rishonim within that. What about, for example, if you have blood comes out of one part of a piece of meat and goes into the other, would it be mutter or not? We know that dam hei vonim shalei pirish, that blood from the limbs that did not move from its place is technically mutter, which is why you have, for example, we talked about the other day, putting meat in vinegar or whatever to close up the blood vessels, ne'ikir adin, that kind of thing would be mutter, because then the blood doesn't move from its place. Would the same thing apply over here, where it's all within one piece? There was a machlokas rishonim on that point. There was a machlokas rishonim on that point as well. And now here we seem to have a proof that it would be osur, because in fact the Gemara is saying that it would in fact be osur. The other opinion would say, Tosfos explains, Uriu in the Masechta, it just means, in other words, that maybe blood completely flows out and goes on the surface and then gets absorbed in the other area, and therefore sure that would be dam shapirash and would for sure be osur. Okay, in any case, the Gemara says we don't have to worry about that, and in fact, you could salt meat together, as long as I did tot of the miflat leibala, and therefore, as long as one of them is exuding, as long as they're exuding, they're not absorbing, and even as Tosfos says, even if you have extra pieces that are added to the pile, then it's still fine, because they're still, at that point, they're still exuding juice, they're still exuding tzir, and therefore it's fine. Okay, so that was Shmuel's second din. Now the Gemara brings Shmuel's third din. Amar Shmuel Meshum Reb Chiya, Hashova Machrakta Shabahema, Kodim Shetetze Nafsho. If a person breaks the neck of the animal before its soul has left it. Now the Shchita itself, we learned earlier in the Masechta, doesn't involve the neck at all. In fact, usually you wouldn't want to cut the neck, because then you'll nick your cut through the windpipe and the esophagus, which are at the front of the neck. But afterwards, the animal is still convulsively moving around. At that point, you might want to cut through or break the neck. Sure, Shmuel says you shouldn't do that. It causes the meat to become heavier, because what happens is, at the time of the shchita, Rashi explains, blood is going to be pouring out. Now, if you break the neck, Now, normally what happens is, as the animal is being shechted, then it gives out a big groan, it gives a huge last breath, and that forces out as much of the blood as possible. But now if the spine and the spinal cord are still intact. If you break the spine and the spinal cord, then it doesn't have the energy to do that, so now not very much blood comes out. And therefore, the blood ends up getting reabsorbed into the limbs of the animal. So now it causes the meat to be heavier than it otherwise would, because now it contains that blood that otherwise would have spurted out during the shchita. So it makes the meat heavier. The goizel is a brias, and it's stealing from people, because then he's selling people the meat by weight. But now, in the end, the weight contains some of the blood, which anyway they're going to have to kasher and remove the blood. And he's causing blood to get absorbed into the limbs. So don't do that, in other words. So the Gemara says, What does Shmuel mean? Is he telling us three different statements, or is he telling us two? namely, he's causing the meat to be heavier, and how is it that he's stealing from people? So the problem is, because he's causing blood to remain absorbed in the limbs rather than the animal gives that last breath and spurts it all out. Now that would imply, in other words, the problem is only if you're selling the meat to others. So then you're selling it to them by weight, and then it's a problem because you're selling that because you're in effect then the person is defrauding them by giving them meat that contains a lot of blood. Hold it, yidei shapur dami, implying Shmuel then would say, if you're doing it for yourself, if you're just shechting the animal in order to eat it yourself, then there's no problem. By yourself, there's of course no problem of defrauding yourself. So then, so you want to do that, gesunta hate, it just means you're going to have to be careful when you kasher it. Or dumali yidei nami also, or maybe Shmuel means that even for himself, it would be osur, because the result of that is, so it's two isurim, goes all sabrias if you sell it to others, and mavriya dam be'evarim, and then you're not going to be able to get it out effectively, and then the person is going to end up being over on eating blood. So on the face of it, then Shmuel is saying just that. So that's the question. According to that second way of looking at it, it would be a problem not just if you're selling it to others, but even if you're just going to eat the meat yourself. And because then you can't capture it effectively. So that's how Rashi learns. But the Rishonim ask on the Rambam. Then in that case, then why is he using the expression Mavliya Dambe Varim? He should say flat out, you're making it osur because now you can't capture it anymore. So on the side here, it brings a different gusa from the Rif and the Rush. That the question is, once blood has gotten absorbed into the limbs, would you be allowed to eat that meat raw? Or not. Again, raw meat, in principle, you could eat, because it's dam shalai pirish, because it's blood that didn't move from its place. But maybe you could argue, in this case, where it absorbed this extra amount of blood that wouldn't normally be there after the shritta, then maybe it would be also, and the only way would be to kasher it and cook it. So according to that way of looking at it, fine, if you did break the mafrekas, then the meat doesn't become osur, but it just means, in other words, that you're still going to have to Then you're going to have to cook it, or you're going to have to kasher it with salt, or you're going to have to kasher it with roasting, as opposed to other meats. Conceivably you could eat meat raw. So then according to that, then it's just he's potentially machshel other people, but not himself. So the Gemara says teiku, so we have to leave it unresolved. So according to Rashi, it would mean that you can't kasher the meat at all. According to the Rif and everybody else, it would mean that you can eat the meat, you just can't eat it raw. So in Shulchan Aruch, in practice, it brings that if you did that, then you're going to have to salt it, or you're going to have to roast it, as the case may be. And in fact, the Amar says that the minhag is to be machmir. In that case, even if you're going to roast it, you would still have to cut it and salt it first. You'd have to do both. But it's better not to do that in order to avoid the whole problem in the first place. Okay. The Mishnah says, that ends the discussion of kashering meat. You know, we got into it by way of the previous Mishnah and talked about about eating the udder, where you have to do something to get the milk out of it, and therefore that eventually led us into when you eat meat, you have to first salt it, or you have to do something in order to remove the blood that's absorbed in it. Now we're going back to matters of basa b'chalav. So the Mishnah says, "Hamala sa'ifim agvina ala shulchan." If a person puts bird meat, chicken with cheese on the table, ain't over beloisesa, then he's not over on a loisesa on it. Now, obviously, Rashi points out putting it on the same table is certainly not also daraisa, but the implication would seem to be that eating them together would be an isur daraisa. So that's what the Gemara says, "Ha'oichlo over beloisesa." So the implication seems to be. To eat them together would actually be a loisaseh. Shmamin absar oif v'chol of daraisa. Now that would show that our Mishnah holds that to eat chicken and milchuk together would be also daraisa. Now as we learned at the beginning of the parak, Rabbi Akiva holds, and as we're going to learn in more detail in the Gemara soon, now that Rabbi Akiva holds it's not, it's also only dirabanan. But our Mishnah seems to be saying the only thing that's not also daraisa is to put them on the table together, but eating them, it sounds like is also dirabanan. And the answer is not necessarily, because maybe what the Mishnah means, Ema, Amala Sa'ifim Agvina Ala Shulchan, Ene Bal Lidei Loisese. If a person puts chicken and cheese on the table together,
There's no possibility of a loisa said. There's no possibility that that might lead him to an isur torah, because even if he ate them together, it would be also only dirabanan. So in other words, the chiddush of the mission would not be that putting them on the table is fine, but eating them together would be also daraisa. No, on the contrary, it's telling us that even that because there's no isur torah possible in the first place, therefore you're allowed to put them on the table together. Nevertheless, as we learned at the beginning of the perek, we had this Shammai and this Hillel argued about that. And said that, and then Bishamai said you could put them together, and Bishillel said you can't. And of course, the halacha is according to Bishillel, and therefore you can't do that as well. Again, as we learned at the beginning of the perek, to put them on the same buffet is fine, as long as you make sure that people are going to know which is which. But if you're talking about but to put them on the same eating table, that would be also dirabanan. Okay. Next, the Mishnah says. Let's talk about what kinds of meat and what kinds of milk are included in the Isur. The Mishnah says, "Bsar behema tahora, b'chalev behema tahora." Meat of a kosher domestic animal, together with cooked in the milk of a kosher domestic animal, also levashol, also b'hanah. Those you're not allowed to cook together, and it's also b'hanah. It's also to even have hanah from. So, for example, you can't feed it to a pet or give it to a goy or whatever. On the other hand, beside behemoth tahora, b'chalev behemoth tmeah, but if it was the meat of a kosher animal cooked in the milk of a non-kosher animal, or beside behemoth tmeah, b'chalev behemoth tahora, or the other way around, the meat was from a non-kosher animal, and the milk was from a kosher animal, mutalavashal, then you're allowed to cook them together. You're not to eat them, of course, but it will be mutter bahana. So you can't eat them, of course, because one or the other is not kosher. But you would be able to have hana from it. So you could feed it to a pet, as the Gemara is going to explain that basa b'chalav only applies where both of them are kosher. Next, the Mishnah says. According to the Chachamim, in fact, the Isur Daraisa would apply to birds as well. Only Rabbi Akiva, as we're going to learn now, says that it doesn't apply to them Daraisa. So the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Akiva, Mechayev Va'oif Einim Minatorah. Rabbi Akiva says the Basa B'cholov with the meat of a wild kosher animal or a bird are not also Minatorah. Shenema, as Rabbi Akiva says, because it says three times, because it says in the Torah, Lois Savashal G'di B'chalev Imai, it says don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. Now, as the Gemara is going to explain, it doesn't mean only a kid, doesn't mean only a baby goat. It means other kinds of meat as well. But nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva would say, because it says three times, prat l'chaya ulo'oif ubehemet meya. The three times come to exclude. It doesn't apply to a wild animal, it doesn't apply to a bird, and it doesn't apply to a non-kosher, to a non-kosher animal. So therefore it's not going to be also daraisa. It will indeed be also dirabanan, according to him. But there wouldn't be the isu daraisa, and therefore you wouldn't have the isu hana of it. Rabbi Yosef Aglili Omer. Rabbi Yosef Aglili says, here's another point. Nema lo soichlu kol nevela. The pasuk says, don't eat any nevela. The nema, and the say the third time, the first two times that the Torah mentions about lo savashu gdi b'chalevim, about basa b'chalov, is it mentions in connection with bikurim. The third time where it mentions it, it says at the beginning of the pasuk, lo soichlu kol nevela. Do not eat any nevela. The nema, and the same pasuk continues, lo savashu gdi b'chalevim, don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. So therefore, we can learn from that. Says Rabbi Yisagli, the Estra Osma Shum Neveva, also the Vashal B'cholav. So whatever kind of creature can become also as Neveva, then you're not allowed to cook it in milk. So that does include wild animals as well. You're telling me, Rabbi Akiva, that it doesn't apply to wild animals because the pasuk says Gedi. Says Rabbi Yisagli, no, the fact is, wild animals, wild kosher animals like deer, would also be usur because of nevela. Therefore, basa b'chalav is going to apply. Is going to apply as well. But then Rabbi Yisrael really continues. Oif she'osu mishum nevela. Well, then birds which are also on the grounds of nevela.
Yochol Yehi also Levasha B'cholov. You would think that that also Minatoyi, you're not allowed to cook in milk. Talmud Lema, therefore he says no. B'chalev Imoi, in its mother's milk. Now it doesn't have to mean its own mother's milk, Daska, but at least it has to be a species that has mother's milk. Yotza Oif Shein Lechalev Eim. So therefore says Rabbi Yisrael Glili, the pasuk is excluding birds which do not have mother's milk, because birds don't lactate. So in other words, you have three different opinions. You have like this. When it comes to domestic animals, everybody agrees it's also daraisa. When it comes to wild animals, the Tanakama is gonna hold it's also daraisa. Rabbi Akiva, the Tanakama and Rabbi Yitzhak really are gonna hold it's also daraisa. Rabbi Akiva is gonna say it's not also daraisa, but it would be also drabbanan. As far as birds, the Tanakama is going to say it's also midaraisa. The Rabbi Akiva is going to say it's also only drabbanon. And Rabbi Yisrael Glili will end up seeing, in the Gemara what he holds as far as birds. As far as behemoth tmeya, everybody's going to agree that daraisa it's not also as basa b'cholav, but of course it's also to eat anyway. So those are the basic divisions of the different opinions. Okay, so first we have to establish how we know that when the pasuk says lo yisavashal gdi b'chalei v'imoy, how do we know that gdi includes other kinds of kosher domestic animals as well, and according to Rabbi Yisrael really also wild ones. After all, gdi means a young, literally means a young goat, so maybe the issue applies only to a young goat. So the most important thing is, how do we know that it applies more generally? Amar Rav Elazar, so Rav Elazar says, Amar Kura, because the pasuk says, by Yishalim, in the story of Yehuda and Tamar, so Yehuda had, I wanted to have relations with Tamar, she says, you have to leave me a pledge, he says, I'll send you a goat, you have to pay me, she says, yeah, he says, I'll send you a goat, she says, you have to give me a pledge, meanwhile, till you send the goat, and he gives her his cloak, and his staff, and his signet ring, and then later on, he sends his friend with the goat, Shalach Yehuda, Sneer Izim, Yehuda sent the young goat, with his friend Chira, and he couldn't find her because, of course, he didn't realize that she wasn't really a professional zoner. She had done this only because she wanted to have relations with Yehuda and bear his children. Now, so therefore, so it says, Gdi ha'izim, the kid of the goats. Therefore, kan gdi izim. Therefore, we learn from that, that dafka over here, the word gdi, means dafka, a young goat. Ha'kamokam shenema gdi sam, but if it says elsewhere, gdi, without specifying the species, then it means I feel a part of a roch of a mashma. Then it would apply even to a cow or to a sheep. So therefore, the word gdi doesn't just mean goats. The word gdi by itself means the young of any animal, or even the mature ones. And gdi izim specifically means a gdi of the goats. So the Gemara says v'leilaf mina. Well, then why don't we learn from that? Why don't we learn a binyan av or gzera shava from that and say that every place elsewhere it says gdi dafka means a goat. And the answer is krachrina, because you have another pasuk earlier when Yaakov is going to go and get the brachas from Yitzchak. The pasuk describes how Rivka had to disguise him, and Yaakov has smooth skin, and Esav has hairy skin. So the pasuk says, "Ve'es odus gedoya he'izim." So she took the skins of the gedoya he'izim. Again, it says gedi, and it says izim. So again, kan gedoya he'izim. So dafka over here, gedi. Dafka over here, gedi means a goat. Means a young goat. But elsewhere where it says gdi, without specifying, after the pot of a roch of a mashma, then it will mean other species as well. So we have two places where we see that gdi is paired together with izim, and only there, and their dafka there doesn't mean goats, but not anywhere else. And the Rosh Yosef points out that first the Gemara is assuming that gdi by default means izim, and then you have because it says no, then it means not, and now we're saying the other way around that maybe we should learn from it that it means all behemoth tahora. So he explains that basically that's the question. We don't know what the word gdi means, and therefore the Gemara is trying to figure out how we can learn it from the psukim. Okay, again the question is v'leilach mine. Again, why don't we learn from that and say that therefore every time it says gdi means dafka goats. And the answer is, because at this point you have two psukim that teach us the same thing.
As we know, we have a rule throughout Shas that if you have the same thing as said in two different psukim, then you can't learn from one to the other. Because if the Torah wanted to tell us, and only if the Torah wanted to tell us to make a binyan out from it, then it would tell us in one place, and then we would learn from it to all the others. But here, where it says in two places, then it means dafka those places. Now, Tosfos points out in each of these stories, it mentions the word gdiism several times. What it means is it's counting all the ones in the story of Yehuda and Tamar, it counts them all as one. And all the ones in the story of Yaakov with Rivka and Yitzchak, then it counts them as all one. So fakir, we can't learn from that. It means on the contrary, we have to learn, it means on the contrary, that it means only in those places. Does it mean gdiism as opposed to everywhere else the word gdi means any kind of animal. Okay, the Gemara says Hanichal Mandam Ein Malamdin. Fine, that works out according to the opinion that says that you can't learn from Shnei Suma Boim Keachad. Once it says twice, then you can't learn from it. Elo Mandam Malamdin, but you have the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in some places in Shas, who says that sometimes you can even have it does say twice, and nevertheless you can learn from it for other places, because you can say that even though we could have learned it from the one place, the Torah is Todayach, the Torah goes to the trouble of mentioning it in a second place as well. But so according to him, you could learn from that. Well, then according to him, then Mighty Kilmema, then what are you going to say? Why don't we say that G'di, that from the two G'doya who is him, we learn that the word G'di, Davka, means a goat, and then Basa B'cholav would apply only to goats? And the answer is Tre Mi'utik, Sivi, because you also have two Mi'utim. You have, it says Izim, and it says, instead of Izim, it says Ha'izim. In each of the cases, it could have said G'di Izim, and it says G'di Ha'izim, and therefore that's a Mi'ut, and therefore that's a Mi'ut, and therefore that it means that only in these cases does G'di mean davka a goat, as opposed to in other places where gdi is going to mean other kinds of species as well. Tosfos wonders in that case why we need the hay on both of them. The Tosfos elsewhere that gives an explanation. It has to do with the concept of miut achamiut, that sometimes you have, if you have two miutim, one after the other one, then we would be the rabbis, we'd be including, so therefore we need the other miut to tell us that not. So the bottom line is everybody agrees that lo sevashu gdi b'chalevimai includes not only goats, it includes other species as well. But again, you have the machlokas and the Mishnah. Does it apply minat Torah to wild kosher animals, or only domestic ones, according to the Tanakhama and according to Rabbi Yosef Levi? It applies to wild kosher animals as well, and according to Rabbi Akiva on a Daraisa level, not. Okay. So the Gemara continues on the Shmuel. So Shmuel explains, you have three times where it says lo sevashu gdi b'chalevimai. So we're going to focus on why it says gdi in each time. Why it says gdi in each time, and why it says b'chalev ima in each time. So omashmo gdi l'rabas is a chaylev. First of all, the word gdi comes to include chaylev. Suppose a person cooked chaylev in cholov, and we're going to have that at the top of the next, amud. We're going to have it at the bottom of this amud. It seems a little confusing. You have in an unpunctuated gemara, the word chaylev and cholov are spelt exactly the same way, and there's no nekudis. So you have to be able to tell which one is which. But here what it means is if you were to cook chaylev in, which is anyway also, if you were to cook it in milk, then also there would be the issur of basa b'chalav on that. And the point is that issur chal al issur, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain. So that's one limud. Gdi l'rabas is a mesa. Second of all, the word gdi comes to include if the animal died without shchita. So if he cooked nevela with milk, and again, the nevela is already issur, and nevertheless, you still have the issur of basa b'chalav on top of that. Gdi l'rabas is a shlil. The word gdi also comes to include an unborn animal found inside the womb, whereas we learned earlier in the Masechta, you're allowed to eat it without shchita, because the shchita of the mother was effective for it, but nevertheless, you're not allowed to eat that. You're not allowed to eat that with milk. The word gdi also means to exclude the blood, so if you were to cook the blood together with milk, then it wouldn't be an issur of basa b'chalav, it would be an issur of blood, but it wouldn't be an issur of basa b'chalav. Gdi lahotzi es ha-shulya. The word gdi also comes to exclude the shulya, the amniotic sac, that if you cook that with milk, then there's no issur of basa b'chalav, because that's not really considered meat. And the last one, gdi lahotzi es ha-tmeya, and the word gdi comes to exclude a non-kosher animal, as we said in the Mishnah. So we have six things that he's learning from the word gdi. The Gemara is going to ask, how can you learn six things when you only have three times that it says gdi? Well,
But we'll get to that after we finish Shmuel's whole drasha. Then he continues, b'chalev imoy, when the Torah says three times, b'chalev imoy, and it's mother's milk. So we can learn from that three other dinim. B'chalev imoy v'le b'chalev zachar. First of all, it implies, first of all, it means only it's mother's milk, but not the milk of a male. Sometimes you may have a male animal. Sometimes you find it with people as well, where the males can lactate to at least some extent. They're like the hormonal balance is messed up or whatever it is, and therefore you can have a little milk can come out of them. So nevertheless, though, there wouldn't be an issur d'oraisa to cook meat with such milk. So that's the first thing we learn from B'chalev Imoy, that it means it has to be a creature that's capable. It has to be a creature that's capable of being a mother, which a male is not, and therefore there's no iser on it, at least on a d'oraisa level. So the Shach discusses maybe it should be osur, maybe it should be at least should be osur d'rabbanan because of Maris Ayin. So we could talk about that. So first the Shach says maybe it wouldn't even be osur even d'rabbanan, but then he says that maybe it would be osur d'rabbanan, and he goes and discusses and brings various sources on that back and forth. So fine. So that's one thing we learn from B'chalev Imoy. B'chalev Imoy b'lo b'chalev shchuta. The word B'chalev Imoy also implies that it doesn't apply to milk from a shchuta. So this is when we learned before about the udder. We said that's why the milk in it was not also d'oraisa, because the animal's dead already, and therefore it can't be a mother anymore, and therefore that's not also as basa b'chalev. And the third one, B'chalev Imoy b'lo b'chalev tmeya. B'chalev Imoy means not the milk of a non-kosher animal, which again can't possibly be the Imoy, can't possibly be the mother of a kosher species. Okay, so those are all Shmuel's lemudim of how we learn the basics of what the issur of bas b'chalev applies to on a d'oraisa level and what not. So they want to ask, Tof plus a gedik tzivi, but the problem is it says only three times gedik, anan shita darshinan, and Shmuel is giving us six drushes about it. How does that work? How can you douse in six things? How can you douse in six things from three words? And the answer is Kasaba Shmuel Isur Chal Isur. Because like this, Shmuel holds that one Isur is able to be Chal on another Isur. That even though you have something that's already Osir, it could still be Osir with another Isur as well. Therefore, the Isur Chalev Umesim Echad Kronaki. So therefore, the fact that Chalev cooked with milk, and the fact that a dead animal, a nevela, cooked with milk, that the issur applies to them, you can learn them from one pasuk. Both of them, you have their osur from beforehand, and now they can become osur as basa b'chalav as well. Damnami, as far as blood, you don't need an actual pasuk for it. Lav gdihu, because not gdi, because the gdi implies the actual flesh of it, not the blood. The Shoyanami, Pirshaba Almahu, and as far as the amniotic sac, you don't really need a limud for it because it's Pirshaba Alma, it's just like waste. It's not really considered food. So you wouldn't really need, it would be like waste from the animal. So therefore, you don't really need a pasuk to tell us that not. Poshulahu Tre, so you really only have two things that you really only have two gdis that you're using for the drasha. Chad Rabbis is a shlur, chad the ma'oti behemet smeya. One tells us that the unkosher, that the unborn animal, that bas b'chalav still applies to its flesh. And the other one tells us that it does not, that minatoda does not include a behemet smeya, a non-kosher animal. There are two girsois over here and two different explanations that Rashi brings. First, Rashi brings a girsa that has the words over here in the Gemara, as we have it, that Shmuel holds Isu Chalal Isu. So therefore, you don't need a pasuk to tell us about Chalev or Mesa, because they're already Osir, they're anyway Osir. On the other hand, Rashi has problems with that explanation, because it doesn't fit with something that we learn later on in the Perek. So rather, Rashi says better to not be girdus those words, Rashi says that no, the correct girsa in the Gemara would be to take out those words and say that, you know, it's not a matter of isur chalal, isur chalev, and mesa. You can learn from the same pasuk because you can learn from the same pasuk. And therefore, so you end up having all three gilis available for the drasha. It could have said lo savasha b'chalev imay, and we would understand that it means anything that has chalev im. So why does it say gedi? Since after all, anyway, gedi is not specifically a gedi, as we said before. It means other species as well. So therefore, so we can learn one teaches us not chalev, not that if the person cooks chalev or the meat of a dead animal. So then we're going to say isur chalal isur. So we're not going to have the words in the Gemara that Shmuel holds isur chalal isur, but nevertheless, we'll still say that that's where we learn it from. So as long as they're also, then we're going to have another. Another one is, and there's no reason. Rashi points out there's no logical reason to say that one that it should apply less to one than to the other. The second one would be for the shlil. The third one would be to take out the tmeya. So therefore, so that's how Rashi. That's how Rashi learns. That's Rashi's preferred explanation. That in fact, that at this point we're not gerdus in the Gemara. The words that Shmuel holds isu chalal isu. We can infer it from what he's saying, but it doesn't actually say so. On the other hand, Tosfos defends the Girsa, as we have it over here. Shmuel does hold Isur Chalal Isur. If he didn't hold that, then in fact he couldn't learn Chalev and Mesa and Nevela from one pasuk. He would have said that it refers only to whatever is most similar. So now the Gemara is in fact saying that Shmuel would hold that Isur Chalal Isur, and then the Gemara is going to ask soon that Shmuel hold that. Shmuel seems to not hold of that. So two different gifsos and two different explanations in the Gemara whether we have that gifsa or not. Now one interesting point that the Rishonim bring up is even if you're going to say fine, Nevela or Chalev were already Osir, but they were Mutar Bahana, whereas Basar B'Chalav is Osir Bahana. So why shouldn't the Isur be Chal on them anyway and make them Osir Bahana as well? So Tosfos earlier, when we had the whole sugya about Isur Moisif and all that, Tosfos explained that when you just add an Isur Hanar, that's not called an Isur Moisif. It's just called Isur Chomer. It's called a stronger Isur, and we had a discussion over there whether that's Chal on another Isur. The Rambam has a whole different point of it. The Rambam has a point in his Pirush HaMishnayos, where he calls this Nekuda Nifla, a wonderful point. He says that because the Torah never says not to eat it, it just says Lois Savashal. And therefore, we can learn from that, says the Rambam, where the issue of eating it doesn't apply, then the issue of hanar doesn't apply either. Well, if we're going to say that by nevela with milk or chela with milk, if we're going to say that one issue is not chal on the other, then the issue of hanar won't be chal either, and therefore you can't call it an issue moisif. So that's how Shmuel can do his drushes. But the question is Sava Shmuel Isur Chalal Isur? Does Shmuel in fact hold that one Isur is able to be Chal on top of another Isur? Va'ama Shmuel Mashum Rabbi Lazar. Shmuel says in the name of Rabbi Lazar, on the side of here, it's supposed to be Eliezer, he says, How do we know that if a Kohen was Tomei and ate Truma that's Tomei, where he's not Chayin Misa, now if he's Tomei and eats Truma, that's Tahar, then he is in fact going to be Chayiv, then he's going to be Chayiv, Misa B'dei Shemayim. But how do we know that if the Truma itself was Tomei, that he himself, that he's not going to be Chayiv Misa for it? So Shmuel says, Shenema, because the pasuk is Mesuvoi Ki Chavaluhu, they will die because of it, because they desecrate it. So only when the Truma becomes desecrated by him eating it, namely he's Tomei, and the Truma itself was Tahar, and it could have been eaten. As opposed to this case where the truma is already desecrated before it can't be eaten. Even before that, because it was Tomei, and therefore Shmuel says we can learn from that therefore Misa B'dei Shemayim wouldn't apply. Now, isn't that a case of Isur Chalal Isur? It was already Osir from, so we're saying that Shmuel holds that Isur is not Chal on one Isur. In other words, it was already Osir for this Kohen who's Tomei to eat truma, to eat any truma, and now it's truma Tmeya, and we should say that the one Isur is Chal on the other one. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta discusses, when we had that whole discussion of Isur Chalal Isur, maybe we'd have to be talking about that the Truma became Tomei, and then later on the Kohen became Tomei, and therefore so now the two Isurim can't be Chal. But fine, we see that Shmuel does not hold Isur Chalal Isur. So the answer is, the Gemara says, first of all, Ibarisayim Ba'alma Isur Chalal Isur. In general, Shmuel might hold that one Isur is in fact, Chal on another Isur, the Shiny Hosn, the Miat Rachmano, Mesu Voy. There it's different because the Torah has a specific limit. It says they would die because of it.
So therefore, it means, in other words, that the So it's mamayit, and say that, and then it means that it doesn't apply in a case where the truma was already tummy. So either according to the different explanations of Rashi before, according to the first explanation, usually isur chal al isur, and that would apply to chaylev and nedela, and only when it comes to this case of truma, then we would say that that it's not so. According to the other girsa, the preferred girsa of Rashi, it would mean that the Torah is telling us by bas b'chala, but applies to them, and we can learn binyan av that in general isur chal al isur, and only when it comes to truma is the Torah telling us that not so. Okay. So that's one answer. Iboy sema ba'alma kasava shmuel ain isu chal al isu. Another possibility is that Shmuel maybe usually holds that one isu is not chal on another. But shiny hoch the rabbi Rachman Gdi. He, on the contrary, the Torah is including by using the word Gdi, and therefore telling us that, therefore telling us that it means that that in this case one isu is chal on another. He also you have the two different gersos in Rashi about earlier in the Gemara, and then Rashi says here's a proof for his preferred girsa that all three times that it says Gdi are available for the Durasha, as opposed to according to the girsa in front of us where one of them was teaching us the basic issue. So you see, it actually says from this Gemara over here, it works out much better. So those are two possibilities. So again, Shmuel might hold that usually ain isur, that usually isur is chal on isur, but you have a mirror by truma. Normally you could say ain isur chal on isur, but here you have a ribui. The ibay same, a third possibility is what Shmuel himself holds versus what he quotes from his Rebbe. He's quoting from Rebbe Eliezer. He himself doesn't have to, he's quoting that, but he doesn't necessarily have to agree with that. And he may and he would say that Rabbi Eliezer would say that isur chalal isur, or the other way around, he would say from Rabbi Eliezer that ain isur chalal isur, and therefore the koyin who's tomei who eats truma tmeya is not in fact going to be over, is not going to be chayiv misur b'deshanayim. Whereas Shmuel himself would disagree with that and say that isur is chal on another isur, and therefore misur b'deshanayim could apply as well over there. Okay. So you have a few different possibilities of whether one isur can be chal on another. When we said before, the blood is not considered part of the gedi. Tosfos says that Tosfos says fine, but if it only that's the point. If it said only loisavasha basar b'chalev imoy, then we would exclude the blood because the blood is definitely not considered the flesh. But when we say loisavasha gedi, Then we're saying that it does exclude the blood. In other words, in the sense again, if a person cooks blood together with milk, then it's not an isur of basa b'chalav. There is of course the isur. There is of course the isur of blood. Okay. So far we're saying, in other words, that we have various limudim of what isn't included. In particular, we said that Shmuel holds, that Shmuel had gur drasha, that if a person cooks chalev with milk, the issue of basa b'chalav will in fact apply to it. So we're going to take up that point tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we're going to discuss whether in fact a person is chayiv malchus for that. Basically, in other words, it's going to get into this question of isur chal al isur, and does the Torah mean to include it in the first place when it comes to the isur of lois of ashok di b'chalev imay?